Out here, we feel things. The sore calves that lead to epic views. The cool waterfall mist during a hot hike. And the breeze that hits just right at the summit. But hey, don't just listen to us. Experience it for yourself. All Trails makes it easy to discover the best of the outdoors. With more than 450,000 trails around the world, points of interest along the trail, and offline maps for always-on navigation. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
He's unpredictable. He's relentless. He's fearless. He's smart. He's a jerk. Oh man, what a jerk. How would you describe Kirk Minahan?
He's talented.
He's blunt.
He's complicated.
He's the fakest tough guy I know.
He's honest.
A self-proclaimed weenie.
He's angry.
He's actually a good guy.
He's a psycho big mouth prick.
I wish we had more Kirk Minahans.
How would you describe Kirk Minahan?
Combustible.
Unpredictable.
Venomous.
Testy.
Obnoxious.
Selfish.
Polarizing.
Pompous.
Enough about me. Let's get to the show.
It's Kirk Minahan's Enough About Me.
All right, I got Buck in here this week, Steve Buckley. My goal was to avoid any long stories about fucking Tony Canigliaro and he covered the Mariners in 1962 or any of that stuff. I just wanted to talk to Buck about Buck. I wanted to get the bitter Buck because he doesn't hate anybody, which frustrates me. So we talked about EEI. We gossiped a little bit about the media. We talked about him coming out of the closet. We did it all, but an hour-long conversation. I'll apologize because I had a cold. I still kind of have it now, so I sound like shit. But Buck sounded great. It was a good talk with my friend Steve Buckley.
So as I gaze out in this magnificent vista as we're in right now, and I look at the midday show, the 10 to 2 show with your friend Glenn Ordway, Lou Maloney, and Fourier, I am reminded, and correct me, Buck, if I'm wrong, that was a show that at one point in the history of EEI was offered to you, or you were in the mix for, or is that wrong?
It was never offered. I was in the mix.
Were you a finalist?
But, well, I can tell you this. I always thought that it was a bag job for Numi.
Oh, so it was the Numi time, not the Hawley time.
No. It was the Numi time. And we all did various versions of the show. I did it with, I think, Dale.
Right.
And for a while, there was talk that McAdam was going to get it, then this guy was going to get it. And what I can tell you is that we were at the Super Bowl, and I forget which one it was because the Pats have been in so many. And we were on a bus, and McAdam got a call from Jason Wolf saying, hey, it's not going to be you. We moved in a different direction and so forth. And McAdam told me that. And so he said, we're on a bus going to, you know, Patriots press conferences.
Yeah.
And he says, did you get a call? And I go, well, no. So now I'm thinking, well, geez, McAdam's out. And so I called up Jason, and I said, hey, just wondering what's going on with the show and blah, blah, blah. And he said, just hold on for a bit. We haven't made a decision yet. And I said, am I still in the running? He says, yes, just hold on. So they were candid with Sean.
Right.
So I figured, well, why aren't they just saying, no, it's not going to be you? Because, you know, again, we thought it was a bag job for Noumi, which I think it was.
Okay.
But I think me and maybe a few other people might have been a fallback if the negotiations fell through or something like that.
You wanted it, though.
Oh, of course I did.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
I mean, do you still like doing radio?
I love doing radio. But I also don't have a, I don't go sticking daggers in people. And I can tell the story now or later as to how not holding a grudge got me 15 years on the big show with Glenn.
What do you mean? What do you mean sticking daggers in people?
Well, like, you get all, you know, well, how Pete imploded.
Oh, okay.
On air.
I thought you were talking about me. All right.
No, okay. No. We'll get to you.
Okay. But, plenty of time.
But listen, I love Pete. Working with
Shepherd,
Pete on the,
yes.
Pete Shepherd.
Guest last week.
Working with Pete on the big show all those years was a joy.
I worked with Pete. I love the guy.
He was enormously entertaining.
Yes, a great, yes.
But he also, boom.
Well, I think Pete sometimes, you know, he's got a big heart, right?
Absolutely.
He's a great guy. But I think sometimes he starts, I wouldn't say quite say imagine things, but he starts to think that the world is sort of out to get him a little bit. And to your point, goes from Bill Bixby to Lou Ferrigno. He just bam, gone. And that
was right in my wheelhouse. That was a good one.
That's a little too modern for you, Buck.
Yeah.
But you know, and you want to say to Pete, you just want to grab him and say, just take a deep breath. Just, which I know people always say to me, just take a deep breath and relax. It'll work out. But to your point, he didn't do it. But so you did it, got you 15. What happened?
20 years ago, a woman named Bev Tilden took over programming at WEEI after Phil Serkin. And Phil Serkin brought me in 93. And Beverly hired me full-time for a job that was kind of goofy. It was like I was the full-time fill-in and doing a weekend show.
A weekend show, yeah.
And I was doing, you know, I was doing the quality hang.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing on-air commentaries, like a piece of my mind, Ted Baxter shit.
Like during the day?
Though I would record five of them a week. They'd run one in the morning, one in the afternoon.
Were they terrible or were they
yeah,
just...
Yeah, it was like, you know, I'm Steve Buckley and I'm not happy, you know.
Oh, that shit.
Yeah.
But back and then, it was all sort of new ground, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did a commentary. They would take...
I remember those. Yeah.
They would do one in the morning, one in the afternoon.
Would you tape both at the same time?
Yeah, I'd come in, it was on Huntington Ave,
right.
And I would tape all 10 of them at once.
Oh, for the week.
For the week.
So, but
and it was like the stuff on 985 where they have the...
Feinstein or whatever?
Feinstein, like, you know that thing.
It must have been kind of evergreen, though.
They were.
Right.
Yeah, it was like, you know, God is good.
Designated hitter and shit like
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Exactly.
God.
Good point.
Right.
And so they have Eddie on the afternoon drive, yeah. And you know the deal. Mm-hmm. And so within a year, they move Beverly out, and they bring Glenn in as program director.
Right.
Now, Glenn had been doing the Celtics, and they let him out in handcuffs one day, and he claims otherwise, but they really wanted him out. And so he's not doing the Celtics anymore. He becomes program director, and everybody with a brain knew that he was going to make himself the afternoon drive host.
Mm-hmm.
Why be program director otherwise? And so he calls me in one day, and he says, I have to fire you. And I said, oh. And he said, and he couldn't have been more honest about it. And he says, I'm coming up with an idea for a new show, and I want Sean Grandy to be my flash guy.
Right.
Who does the Celtics now.
Right.
And I want Sean to be my flash guy, and I need the money they're paying you.
To pay him.
To pay Sean. Now, I'm working for ESPN at the time, on ESPN2 with Keith Olbermann and Susie Colbert and Stuart Scott. And I got the Herald column. I was writing a column three times a week for a paper in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
So the money was just, it was a really good situation for me.
Right.
So that I was losing EEI was, okay, I can handle that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll still be able to, you know, pay the bills.
Yeah.
So I said, well, you know, I didn't hold a gun to anybody, said, this is what you got to do, you know, and so forth. Okay, fine. And shook hands and he walked out. And he said, oh, by the way, you can still do the weekend show. I'll just give you a weekend rate.
Right.
So Glenn apparently thought I was going to grab him by the throat and get him in a headlock and, you know,
yeah.
You know, and go nuts. And so I didn't know it at the time, but a day later, he's on the phone with Jason Wolf, and they're putting together what would become the big show.
Right.
Who would be the co-host.
Mm-hmm.
I was not in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
I was not going to be part of
that. No, he never thought about you for that
not
at
first. Didn't even say no because I wasn't in front of his eyes.
Right.
So now he says to Jason, hey, put Buck on the list. I thought Buck was going to get me in a headlock.
Oh, so if you were a dick, he wouldn't be on the list.
If I was a dick, I wouldn't be on the list. So as it happened, I ended up being on the first show.
Yeah.
And then he calls me up the next day. He says, boy, I think the chemistry is really good between us. Next thing I know, I'm on the show two or three times a week for 15 years. And I get to do my kitchen, buy a new car, go to Europe, right. and like all that. Because it's always, you know, it's just money that shows up.
Right. Yeah, you have because, no, right. You have no, it just suddenly a check shows up and, right.
Yeah. So if you're already watching games and interviewing people to write a column for the Herald, now you just have to, on the way home, stop in here and talk for 4 hours. It's not like I'm working at a funeral home.
Right.
Doing and I have to sit down and research all this stuff and then go on the show. So it was certainly easy money. And so my larger point being, Glenn and I became really good friends. He remains one of my favorite people in this business. Whatever else other people may say about him, Glenn never lied to me. So
your greatest weakness, I think, is that you like everybody. And we've talked about this many times.
Yes, I know.
You will never badmouth, basically, effectively, anybody. Ever. And whenever I ask you how you're doing, you say the same thing all the time.
Never been better.
Never been better, right? You say every single time. Which is
I get a problem, though. I've never told anybody.
With me?
I get massive heartburn.
You do?
Massive. When I get stressed out.
When do you get stressed out? You seem very, like right now, you're a very laid back guy.
Right, but
although I've seen you angry before. Like you can get angry.
And when I get angry, something weird happens in my chest.
Have you talked to a doctor about this?
Yeah, he said avoid stress and don't do this. And
how's
don't
that
do
going?
That. I avoid stress.
You generally avoid stress, but
I try.
Yeah, but you're in a business where it can. Some people get driven insane.
Yeah, one of the Super Bowls got. I had it. Bruins postseason because writing live columns in hockey
when they won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, well, it was actually the worst one was when they lost to Chicago, one of those games in the Stanley Cup Finals. So that would have been 13. And you get this massive heartburn. Then you don't sleep for 2 days. I don't know if you read Bob Ryan's book.
I did.
But he talks about that. I remember reading his book last summer, and he talks about writing columns off of postseason hockey games. And you can litter your column with all kinds of stuff for the first edition and you know, on plays, ground ball to shortstop, a punt. Basketball is there's offense every 30 seconds.
Right.
In hockey, you need if you're not an expert on the game, and I love hockey. I grew up with Orr and all that.
Yeah. No, it's different. It is different, though.
And it's hard. So I get a little stressed out writing hockey.
You feel a little inadequate?
No, it's just the nature of the game.
Yeah.
If you give me post-game, go talk to a couple of guys, get, you know, a columnist doesn't have to do X's and O's.
Right.
You give me a post game, and there are certain guys that are really good. Like Bergeron is a very affable guy. He likes me. I like him.
Mm-hmm.
When he got crunched that time in that game against Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We were out in Colorado for the World Series. That was in 07.
Right.
And World Series ended. I come back, and they had that press conference. Mm-hmm. Where they brought him in to answer 5 minutes questions.
Yeah.
And he walked in, and I remember writing, he looked like an old man trying to find a seat on a red line car that was moving.
Right.
And I thought he was never going to play again. I became very proprietary about Bergeron because I honestly thought he would never play again. And he read what I'd written, and we had it. So he's a guy I always go to. I genuinely like him.
But you would agree that 99% of the players in all four sports generally give you shit.
Oh, totally.
I mean, is that a fair?
Totally.
Might be exaggerating, but
and they can talk for 45 minutes and give you nothing.
And I think purposely. Do you think it's different? Do you think the Belichick effect has played its way into other players, other coaches, other athletes?
Well, it certainly has in football because it's mandated.
No, I know, but do you get the sense that other teams and other cities look at this,
yes.
or even just say, "Well,
there's
something to be said to from their end. What's the point?
Right.
Like, I understand why it's great for you. Steve Buckley, but why is it great for me, Dustin Pedroia, who can be really good sometimes, but also really boring sometimes?
I was talking with, Jared Carrabas.
Very well, yeah. He's
and,
on his podcast.
So I'm a big fan of his. And I think that just to go off the tracks here for a minute, we went through the whole era of the fanboy. Well, mm-hmm. I think that the fanboys are now becoming like the cast of Friends. They're getting older, and they're not as cool and hip anymore.
You mean like the Simmons crowd?
Well, the Simmons wannabes.
Right.
Okay, the guys who defend their team.
But
Carrabas
is a fanboy.
Well, but except that he's fanboy.1, okay? Like, he's the next generation. He's the new cell phone. Right. Where guys like him will be snarky and critical of the team. Witness some of the stuff he's written about Buchholz.
Right. And he's the one that outed Sandoval.
Right. And
but how do you feel when you see Jared Karrabias, who I like too, actually, he's a good guy. How do you feel when you sit in a press conference with David Price and they're winking at each other?
I have no issue with that at
You're
all.
Okay with that?
No, totally. I mean,
how about
like,
if it was Jared Karrabias, who now writes for the Boston Herald, and he's doing that?
Listen, I made a pact with myself in 1979, the first time I was in the press box.
It's a written pact?
I wrote it down. Yes, it's
you,
on the wall.
You signed your name
house.
On it? Yes. You did? It's a screed?
I was speaking symbolically.
Okay, well, I don't know. You're a very official guy.
And I was 23. I was working for the Westfield Evening News, and I go into the press box, and first of all, and maybe it's what I seen remember. Mm-hmm. It seemed like everybody was enormously fat, old, and
right.
white,
right.
And there was beer. Mm-hmm. Tommy McCarthy was the press box steward.
Were people smoking there?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And you go to Chicago, they smoke cigars,
right?
In the press, you know, Gleason and those guys,
right?
Jerome Holtzman, Jouse. I mean,
oh,
all those
old,
guys.
Old
Comiskey.
Sports Channel show with those guys.
Yeah, those are the guys.
Yeah, right.
Jouse, Gleason,
right, right.
And those guys, and they wouldn't give you the time of day.
Just
and
assholes.
Purposely.
Like
total.
Assholes or just
grumpy
dismissive,
old men,
right?
And I'm 23 and I'm bright eyed and do you know you make jokes about being this old guy and I covered this and all that.
Well, I don't make you make those jokes.
I actually Glenn started it and I went with it because it's nice to have a niche. And
I know
I actually sat in the press box next to Smokey Joe Wood once. Believe it or not, they were doing
the, is that one of his off days? He was up at the
they were they were doing it was 1980 and they were doing the or 1982. The
anniversary?
70th anniversary of the 1912
who
Red Sox.
Who was left other than him?
Just him, I think.
How old was he when he died?
90-something.
Oh,
he was
okay.
The coach at Yale for years.
Right, right, right. I knew
and
that.
So I'm sitting next to him. And he couldn't have been nicer. But my larger point is that when I first started doing this, the old guys were assholes.
Right.
And I said to myself, I'm not going to be that guy. And and there's this group in New York that in the early 60s they would call the Chipmunks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gergen and Dick Young and guys that were coming along in the mid 40s and early 50s. And I'm sorry, Young was already established. This is Gergen,
when they're kids.
Steve Jacobson, Lupica, guys that were coming along. And the old guys, branded them as not worthy of the job and unprofessional. And stuff. Now, go back a generation earlier, Dick Young changed sports writing forever.
Right.
He was the first guy that he basically invented or popularize the post-game quote.
Right.
And the old guys wrote flowery prose and, you know, the sun was setting and the birds were chirping and all that. Well, Dick Young wanted to know, what kind of pitch was it and why did you make the change? So he's going down to the Brooklyn Clubhouse and talking to Charlie Dressen and guys like that. And he's got a better game story because he's got information.
Right.
And the old guys didn't like that. My point being,
why is that tying the Karrabias?
Because every guy who comes along.
Guy. You don't want to be the old asshole.
The situation changes.
But most guys, don't find that most guys are like that now. When I deal with the old, that older crowd, I'm going to put you in there now as an elder statesman.
Sure.
You're in your 70s now. Guys like you.
Just turned 60 and still run every day.
You and Dan.
Right.
And Borges. Who am I forgetting? Who else? Ryan.
Yeah, Mike Fine with the Patriot Ledger.
Fine.
Howard Omen just retired.
Omen, I mean, DuPont's an asshole. But I mean, you know, we'll get to that later.
I want to get you on DuPont.
Good. Okay, well, I'm right on that. But by and large, when I first met these guys, all these guys, never had an issue. And I don't think Karrabias is having that problem either. But the other reason is I do think the guys on the beat now, day in, day out, maybe it's because of social media. I don't know, maybe, but they are closer to, we always say homers, but whatever, than 20, 25 years ago. I mean, you get the feeling when you follow these guys, I follow them all on Twitter, all the beat writers, they're rooting for the team to win.
I think beat writers have always been homers.
Yeah. Well, it's just because they have to deal with these guys every
because
day.
Because their job isn't to lob hand grenades. That's what, you know, I remember all the fights I used to have with Duquette and Lackey in recent years, and Farrell thinks I'm out to get him.
Right.
And listen, I never once wrote that Farrell should be fired. And when you look at some of the moves he's made, I'm going to throw haymakers at some of the moves he's made. But the beat writer's job is to cover the team, to work the clubhouse, to get information and so forth. So a generation ago and prior to that, you didn't have the benefit of seeing Twitter and Facebook. So you don't. We can't go back in time and imagine what Joe Gilliotti, Larry Whiteside, Bob Finnegan when he was at the Patriot Legend, guys like that, Bill Ballew and Worcester, what they would have been
tweeting.
You don't
cringe when you see some of the stuff on Twitter?
I get amused by it.
You don't say, geez, guys, maybe not. I think the biggest homer of them all is the kid on your beat.
Who, Jason?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Jason is...
You got to talk to him.
I think Jason is edgier right now than he was a year ago. Last year was his first year on the beat for a major newspaper.
He's a homer.
And,
He's one of these guys. He's almost like, you know, wants to make myths reality. Like, he wants you to believe
you,
in the
you
power.
Still read him?
Yeah. Well, that's part of my job.
Do you find that he's edgier this year than he was a year ago?
They're winning also. That's the other thing. Last year they sucked.
Yes.
And he acted like they were playing like they are this year. So
he made the one thing I would criticize him a year ago is that he was doing like a mailbag type thing.
Everything was great.
And, well, it was late in the season. Someone said, hey, they're still in it. And his answer was, well, if this happens and that happens. And I'm like, no, they're done.
You can't do that.
But
you were critical of Bradford when he does commercials with the players.
I was just critical of Jason just this very second.
No, but I'm saying I'm moving on to another guy. You're critical of when you heard Rob. You know, we've talked about it before. I think on the air, you're critical of Rob.
Rob should not be doing commercials with Joe Kelly.
Well, but why not? I'm not sure I disagree with you, but if you're saying that it's not a big deal,
doesn't mean he's a good reporter. Guys, open up to him.
He's the best. I love him. You know I love him. He's the greatest.
He works the clubhouse.
Why shouldn't he? I think I know the answer why, but you tell me why he shouldn't be doing.
I think there needs to be some separation between you and the players.
How come?
Because are you ever going to get critical analysis of Joe Kelly from Rob Bradford?
No, but are you ever going to get critical analysis of Joe Kelly from any beat writer?
Oh, I think so.
Who?
Oh, I can't take everyone's copy from the last week.
It's almost your job. And Dan's job.
Right.
And like these beat guys, you just said it 90 seconds ago. They're not going to be critical of these guys. My guess is my limited experience, Joe Kelly's really nice.
So let me turn it on. He's really what?
In my limited experience with him, Joe Kelly seems like he's very nice to the writers, kind of a friendly guy. He's got a good
attitude.
Seems
that way, yeah.
That goes a long way, right?
Sure.
So they're never going to be critical of him.
So you can do a commercial with him? Or?
Well, my point is...
Do you not have a problem with that? Are you telling me you don't?
No, I'm not a big fan of it. I'll be honest.
Well, that's my only point.
Well, I'm not arguing with you.
It doesn't mean I want Rob let out of the ballpark and you know, listen, go sell linoleum or something. It just simply means I'm not a fan of it. And he knows that. And then I'll tell you one thing about me. If I get something to say about somebody, I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, like, run behind and blah, 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 blah. I said it on the air to you.
He was there. We were the three of us that day.
And I've said it to him. He knows how I feel about it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to launch a congressional investigation.
No, I
don't think the Poynter Institute should investigate.
But my point is...
I think it's a bad look.
My point is, I think the Reds... I think all these guys, and Rob's older, so that don't even count.
And
Rob,
he is the best dressed sports writer in Boston, so he's certainly qualified.
He brings more Red Sox stories than any other local writer.
I'm just saying, I applaud,
but I think
Rob's your boy, and you're going to defend him at all turns.
One of my best friends. But the younger guys, I think they've been influenced a lot, and maybe it's a good thing, I don't know, by the Simmons generation.
Mm-hmm.
And their attitude is to attack hot takes, is to attack anger, is to attack criticism, is to attack contrarianism, and sort of throw it all into, oh, it's easy to do that. Oh, you don't like sports. Oh, this. Oh, that. And I don't think that's really the case. I think you can ask questions. And I wonder.
You don't like sports part of it?
Well, you read this all the time. Like, oh, if you don't, you know, if you don't like Steph Curry, turn in your sports card. Who the fuck doesn't like Curry? You read stuff like that. who feels
that's
that
That's a
way?
Bob Ryan thing. Ryan is always throwing out some...
If you like the World Cup,
Oscar
like sports,
Schmidt from South America, right. Brazil.
Brazil.
I follow Ryan
about it because he said if you don't like the World Cup, turn in your sports card. Well, that means I can't watch Oklahoma City.
That's a Bob device.
Stay last night.
That's one. That's a standing head to use an old newspaper term.
Yeah,
that's one he'll truck out.
You don't think this younger generation as a whole, with social media and Twitter, and sort of fear of backlash, are any more or less homers?
I'm simply saying that if you went back to when I first walked in the press box, it was Gammons, Gilliotti, Whiteside, Jake Liston, Bob Finnegan. I know. I mean, now you're getting a whole bunch of names and that people don't know and that are important. But I think the relationships they had with the players and the way they maybe danced around certain topics because they were beat guys was probably the same as it is now. The difference being that you can't go back in time and open up a magic cell phone and see what Larry Whiteside and Joe Gilliotti were tweeting about the Red Sox in 1979.
Do you
agree with that?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think, yeah, it's impossible to do it. It just feels, but this is the first time I've been exposed to a generation younger than me anyway, though. So,
right.
I have nothing to compare it to. Maybe I'll say, it's like, parents with music. Everybody says their music sucks. Your kid's music sucks. I'm going through it now. My dad used to fight with me about my music. Now I'm listening to my daughter's music. It sucks. It's just the way your brain is wired, right?
I want to get seven different takes from seven different writers. That's what I look for. I've seen criticisms where, like, oh, you guys all wrote the same stuff every day. Well, if David Price gives up six runs in the second inning, we're all going to be all over him. That's easy. But I want a different twist.
Right.
So Jason's going to give his, and Pete Abes is going to give his, and Shaughnessy, and me, and Ryan. And I still count Ryan because he's still relevant, still writes an occasional column. He's on Comcast, does national TV and ESPN. So I still include him in the mix. And my take is going to be my take.
Yeah.
And I wrote a column on Sunday where I applaud Mookie, Jackie, and Swire do that
hit dance them folks thing, or whatever,
which I think is awesome.
Okay.
It's clean. It's fun. It's vibrant. It's in the moment.
I got no problem with it.
And so I said, I can't. And I said, what's the best outfield in history? Well, it's got to be Rice and Lynn and Evans, or Yaz and Reggie. And some guy, and I said, I just can't imagine them doing this, with all respect. And some guy writes me an email and saying, oh, you're trapped in the past. All you write about is, well, no, I was using my knowledge of the past to make a larger point about the three guys in the moment.
Right.
And I'm better equipped to do that than a lot of people, outside of maybe Ryan, because Ryan would do the same thing. Ryan has institutional knowledge. I have institutional knowledge. You can't get that from Jason because Jason doesn't have the institutional knowledge. So he's going to go down a different road. Pete Davis is going to go down. Nick, all the different writers. That's what you want.
When I asked Ryan, he was sitting there, and I asked him when he knew he was going to retire. And he said it's when he knew he wasn't as good a writer as he was like 15 or 20 years ago. Do you think you're as good a writer as you were 20 years ago?
I think I'm a better writer. Because I'm in, and I don't know if you had the coming out stuff on your agenda today, but
we'll get there eventually. You're still gay, right?
I'm still gay.
Okay, good.
And I think when I came out, I became more relaxed. And now I can write. I can say whatever I want. I just feel physically better than I did.
What did you feel like if you wrote? You mean like you had fear of like blackmail, or if you would be critical of somebody?
No, not that.
Oh, it's just to relax you.
It just when I'm relaxed, I'm
from perspective. Yeah. You mean, yeah.
And I told you, I get heartburn majorly to the point where I've had to go to the hospital a few times. And
right.
Like, oh, this is a heart attack. No, your cholesterol is 160 or something. It's crazy. But when I'm relaxed, I do a better job. I write better on deadline when I'm relaxed. I'm more focused when I'm relaxed.
Do you feel like being a columnist at the Boston Herald in 2016 that you might be less relevant than you were 10 years ago or 15 years
Not
ago?
Not at all, because it's always convenient to say, you write for a newspaper.
No, but you understand the question.
I write for a newspaper that happens also to have a website.
Right.
I can take, and we can complain about the website. That's
the website is an issue.
It's iffy. But what I can do is I can take my column that I wrote.
Right.
I can put it on Twitter.
You tweet
it
out.
Put it on Facebook.
Right.
I'm very vigilant about that.
Right.
And a person who might not otherwise pick up the Herald for reasons this, that, or the other thing can go to my Twitter account or go to Facebook and read my column.
Right.
And so I'm not irrelevant at all in that. There are people who don't. I know I have friends who don't pick up the paper that read my column all the time because they or acquaintances, people I see at the gym or at the coffee shop and so forth.
Well, you worry they're going to roll into the Herald one day and they're going to say we're closing the doors in 2 weeks.
I think anybody who works for any newspaper in America, from the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, down to the Westfield Evening News and Journal Tribune of Biddeford, Maine, I cite those because they're papers I work for.
Right.
Anybody who works for a newspaper should have those fears.
Yeah, so you have those fears.
Oh, so of course I do.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you might
not. If you work for a newspaper and you don't have a... I'll tell you what. Back in 2003...
Yeah.
And there's a... Glenn used to make fun of my Toyota Highlander. And I have had the same car 13 years. The reason I have the same car for 13 years is because when the Globe and the Herald both began doing layoffs and buyouts and so forth back in 02, 03, I rolled into the Herald one day and I ran into Kevin Convey, who was then the editor of the paper.
Yeah.
And Kevin and I had a good relationship. I was out to Kevin before I was out publicly because I was telling the people in the industry, this is what I plan on doing at some point.
Right.
And but I asked Kevin one day when they were laying people off, I said, hey, I'm safe, right? Hutshot columnist. I'm on TV. I'm on the big show every day. And he looked at me, was very foreboding, and he was like, oh, nobody's safe. And like, whoa. And right. So I was leasing cars every 3 years, so I could always have this really cool car.
Yeah.
And the lease was up, so I went out and bought a car. And I said, I'm just going to buy a car and hold on to it in case I'm on my ass in a couple of 3 years.
Right.
Well, that was 13 years ago. So now my attitude is I play this little game. I'm about 3 years from getting my mortgage paid off, so I'll drive this car. It runs fine for three more years. So to answer your question, anybody who works for a newspaper in the 21st century should have those fears.
You came out
or at least concerns.
January of 2011?
Very good. January 6, 2011.
I have all my friends coming out dates memorized in my brain.
Anyone who comes out can give you the date.
Well, I would think so. Yeah, I would think so. So was there any point in the 15 or 20 years prior to that where you were this close to doing it?
Oh, totally. It was during the 2003 postseason when the Red Sox were playing the Yankees.
I actually
did an interview with a guy for an hour and a half who was going to write it for ESPN.
Who was that?
Anybody I cannot remember his name.
No.
I was put in touch with him through a mutual friend who actually now works for ESPN.
Why weren't you going to do it yourself?
That's a good question. At the time, I didn't. I thought that I was wrong. I should have done it myself. And as history played out, it was the right move to make.
Right.
And a couple of friends of mine who are gay were saying, you should write it yourself. I didn't know how to write it. Mm-hmm. I was awkward about it. So I gave this interview. The problem was my mom, and this is why I am fervently opposed to outing people.
Right.
I think outing people is the most heinous thing you can do because it does not take into consideration, hey, is the person really gay? Just because you saw somebody at a gay bar. I have straight friends. I go to gay bars all the time.
I agree. But having said that, can you tell me two people that are gay that nobody else knows about?
Very good.
Is that too much to ask?
Yeah.
So the lead to your story is about your mom.
Yes.
Right.
Because I was out to my mom. My mom was a saint. My mom
was
a wonderful person.
I'm sorry, when did you come out to her? Like
90s, late 90s.
Okay.
And but she didn't think I should come out publicly because she thought it would be bad for my career.
Right.
And by 2003, I was driving her to Mount Auburn Hospital for radiation therapy 5 days a week. And mm-hmm. she and I did the interview. And what happened was, I didn't do the interview, but she one day she said to me, and looking back on it, it was clearly a case of she was clearing the books.
Right.
And she said, I think you should come out. Obviously, it's something you want to do and you have full support. And so I gave the interview, and then I was going to I was going on vacation to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, thank you, and when I get back, this is what we'll do.
Right.
I get back, and 2 days after I get back, she has this massive heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the big show, and I got a thing on the phone saying, go to the Mount Robin Hospital immediately. So I left the show. Mount Robin Hospital was like a mile from here.
Right here, yeah.
And I drove over there, and they were wheeling her in, and she was conscious. She was talking and so forth. And I stayed with her. All my brothers came in, my sister. I went there the next morning, and I went into the room she was in, and the room was empty. And the nurse said, well, they're just taking her to intensive care. And I, why? Now, she had another heart attack.
Yeah.
She never came out of it. She died within a week. And it was in December of 03. And then the whole coming out thing, just I told the guy, I can't do the story right now. I'm just way too much. My mother just died.
So we're talking about 7.5 years, though.
Yeah. And then I just lost interest in it.
Did you lead? Did you lead, in essence, a secret life?
No, everybody says that.
Boyfriends?
Yeah.
If you were going out to dinner with Glenn and his wife.
Wasn't to that degree, but I did have I was in a relationship for 5 years, and we went to the Super Bowl together in '96 when they played Green Bay.
Green Bay,
and we were walking around.
If somebody had asked you, you know, are you gay or do you have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, would you have been honest with them if you knew them well, or were you?
Yeah, I was. I had a policy where, well, first of all, policy number one was, and it's a little play on words. I didn't want to be in the closet in my kitchen.
Right.
In other words, if I invited you into my house, I was comfortable with you. And so I didn't want to run around hiding copies of, you know, Out magazine or something.
Right.
But Sid Ziegler, who's at Outsports.com, you guys have had him on the show. There's a term he uses. It's publicly out as opposed to being openly gay. Now, I was openly gay to the degree that I had friends that were gay, and I was out to my select circle of friends.
It's almost like a Jodie Foster kind of thing for a while.
Yeah. Right. But I wasn't publicly out.
Right.
And
but
and,
within your
and right. people you would occasionally get emails and so forth, hey, I know you're a fag and stuff like
right.
that. I always since I knew this would come up, like this is just I still get this stuff once in a while. Like that came in the mail.
Recent action.
And it
says, Buckley, you fucking queer.
Yeah, so I can laugh at that now and show it to friends at parties and stuff.
But you would
and
get something like that in 1997?
It would keep me up all night, yeah.
How long did a certain, that world know about you being, like, how long have you been getting anti-gay mail for? 20 years?
No, because, I mean... Who gave a shit when I was still,
no I know but I'm just
when,
saying
when I was
but it, 2005 it, you were getting it
2000 oh yeah.
Yeah yeah okay
yeah oh totally
so how'd you lose interest?
It wasn't a poor choice of words. In 2004 the Patriots went to the Super Bowl and
right.
won. Sox won the World Series in 2004. Mm-hmm. Patriots won another Super Bowl. Sox, all of a sudden,
right, it takes off.
You know that from
Celtics
October
get good, yeah.
from October of 99 to January of 2002, 2 years, 2 months, and 13 days, or something like that,
mm-hmm.
none of the four teams played a single playoff game. All of a sudden, the decade of dominance, game five, ALCS, Yankees beat the Red Sox. There was not a single playoff game played in this market
right.
until the snow game,
right.
the Tuck Rule game.
Right. That's right. The Celtics sucked. The Bruins were terrible.
And
yeah, yeah.
And so my career is really there's all of a sudden there's World Series, there's Super Bowls, there's this, and it wasn't like I lost interest. It's just that
you wrote
it
a book too, right?
I wrote two books in
yeah.
that period, and it was sort of on the back burner, and then it just got to the point where everybody knew,
right?
And I honestly thought, I mean, so many people for so many years were heroic in terms of. You know, fighting the fight, going all the way back to Stonewall in 1969.
Right.
Before
right.
that, the Mattachine Society, stuff that a lot of people don't know about, and the whole AIDS thing in the early 80s, and the marches on Washington, and the AIDS quilt, and all that. I didn't contribute anything to that.
Right.
And those people made it easier for me. Yet, there was sports, I've considered sports the last frontier. Very few people are out in any, you know, be it management in sports, umpires, players, media, talk show hosts. And
well, even yeah, we're sitting here today in well, it'll be June of 2016 when this is run. And if you're 22 or 23, maybe even you're listening to this, even 2011, where there have been huge leaps.
Yeah.
The leap from 2011 to 2016 is fucking massive.
It's huge.
I mean, back, you know, if somebody came out today, a sports writer, you'd say, oh, okay, well, you know,
yeah.
But in 2011, maybe it's because I knew you too, I guess, and it was in Boston. It was a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's changed a lot even since then.
Yeah. No, it was it was more than I thought it would be. I did go to counseling down at GLAAD down in New York.
Yeah.
They have a guy whose job down there is to work with public people
mm-hmm.
on coming out.
Right.
And one of the fascinating things he said is that our experience is that if you decide to come out, we believe your career will not change. You will not become a movie star. You will not end up
right.
the host of The Tonight Show.
Right.
But you won't really suffer for it either. And that our experience has been is that you'll be really busy for a couple of weeks, and then unless you do something crazy, like jump off a bridge
you'll
or something,
fizzle out.
Things will go back to normal.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what happened to me.
Right.
Things, it was really.
But you didn't think that you were going to get, you didn't think your career was going to be in any trouble by
well,
doing
no,
it.
Well, no, you don't, but there is a fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
And it was very stressful for a couple of days. Very humorous in some respects.
Was
I always,
it done? It was a column done way before.
It was you done a couple it, or, weeks before.
Yeah.
And,
how many people saw it?
What's that?
How many people saw it before you?
There's a guy named John Scheer, who was an editor at ESPN, the magazine. And is now like one of their leading guys on the digital side
yeah,
in ESPN. I'm going to out John. John's gay. John was an editor at Baseball America back in the 80s. And
mm-hmm.
we're very, very close friends. And he's one of the best editors with whom I've ever worked because he used to edit my stuff at Baseball America. So I sent the column to him. He made some tweaks. And then Hank Hernowitz, who was
yep.
then the sports editor of the Herald, is a really good,
great guy, yeah.
really good editor too. He called up and said, why don't you do this instead of that? So it was mainly Hank and John Scheer. And then by then Joe Sciacca was the editor, and I was out to Hank, I was out to Kevin Convey, and then Hank went to Joe, and I had lunch when it was during the bye week before the Patriots lost to the Jets in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And remember they really annihilated them on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
And then they lose at home
45-3 or something.
Yeah. And so I had had dinner with Glenn Ordway at Davio's and said, listen, this is what I'm going to do and so forth. And so I had lunch with Joe Sciacca and I said, and I had the phone. I emailed it to myself. So all I had to do was open my phone and just forward the email.
Yeah.
And Hank had seen it. And obviously John had seen it. And Joe Sciacca had not seen it. So I had lunch with him on a Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever it was. And so I said, I think I'm ready to do this. And I called Glenn. And Glenn, I said, it was Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So I said, and the deal was I would go on the big show for
right.
4 hours. And thank God Rob Bradford was there because it really
I always say
just,
that.
What's that?
I always say that.
Yeah. And so I said, we're going to run the column either tomorrow or Friday. What works best for you? Glenn says, I'd rather you do it tomorrow. Because we have Patriots Friday. Glenn was always thinking himself.
Right.
And we have Patriots Friday. You know, Belichick's on and all that.
Right.
If we run it tomorrow, it's an easier show for me to program.
It makes a show for him.
And yeah, so all he has to do is show up and I'd be gay for 4 hours.
Correct.
And so sitting at a restaurant somewhere in the back bay, I emailed the column to Joe Sciacca, took the subway, took the T home. Had some friends over that night, and it went online at right around midnight, and that's when my phone started going nuts.
I always had, when I first read it, and I, you know, we had known each other for a few years. I had heard rumors, I guess, like everybody had. I'd always had this image of you, like, when I read the show, I was like, you know, I was like, I almost felt bad for Buck because I thought you lived this life in the 80s and the 90s where you'd go on a road trip to Minneapolis and all the guys would go and try and pick up chicks and you were, you know, in the seedy underworld. Like there was, no. I always felt, you know, but that's not reality, right?
No. I was, well, first of all, I quit drinking.
Yeah.
And that changed everything. I quit drinking during spring training in 1989. And not because I had a drinking problem, but I was getting one. My brother, Paul, was... Yeah, I don't talk about this a lot, but he was killed in a car accident.
Yeah.
On the day I flew to spring training in 1988, I was covering the Yankees for the Hartford Current. I got off the plane in Fort Lauderdale, went to pick up my rental car, and there was a message to call the office. I called the office. I'll spare you all the details, but my brother died in a car accident. And it was a horrific accident. He was driving in the Mass Turnpike. A trailer truck traveling eastbound had a blown tire.
Oh, Jesus.
And the tire went across the median, struck the car my brother was.
Your younger brother?
I'm sorry?
Your younger brother? Or
my older brother.
Yeah. How old was he when he died?
He was 34.
Jesus, yeah.
And I adored my older brother.
Right.
He was such a mentor to me because my father had died at 15.
Mm-hmm.
And so I drank a lot during 88. I was going out with Billy Martin, if you can believe that.
Oh, you're
Billy
coming
was
the
manager
yeah,
of the Yankees.
Right.
And Billy was told that, hey, the new guy, his brother died. So he was so kind to me in spring training. And he, I remember one day in Milwaukee, he knew I was going to fly home after the game because I had seen him in the Pfister that morning. And he said, hey, you taking the charter to Minneapolis? I said, no, I'm driving home to see my brother's kids. And he gave me 24 baseballs in the clubhouse in front of like 20 writers. And every once in a while, I would have, not just me, but Michael Kay,
right.
Michael Martinez from the Times, and Billy had the old Casey Stengel thing. These are my writers. And,
right.
And every once in a while, some of the writers and his coaches, George Mittelwald, Art Fowler.
Right.
And but I drank a lot that year. So the next year in spring training, I was covering the Red Sox now.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided on Ash Wednesday I would give up drinking for Lent. And I'm not as much a practicing Catholic. I'm not a practicing Catholic anymore. But I always had to give up something for Lent growing up, and I decided to latch on to my Catholicism.
Right.
I still believe in God. I just became a lapsed Catholic. But I gave up beer for Lent in 1989. Easter Sunday arrived. I never had another drink.
Never drank again.
Never.
Ever. And ever have the urge now or no?
No.
Not
no.
At all.
Not even a no. I have. If you came to my house, there's beer, there's wine, there's
right.
stuff. And, you know, liquor and stuff. Hey, you want a beer? Have a cold? Have a brewski? And So once I stopped drinking, I ramped up my running,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't going out with the boys as much. And I found cool things to do. I started going to theater on the road. If I had a Monday night free in Cleveland or something, I'd go to see some touring show.
Smashing those stereotypes down one at a time.
Oh, yeah. No, that's one that definitely applies to me. I love theater. Yeah. My decorating skills suck.
I mean, that's sort of, so you were young and gay and virile and active in the scariest time in recorded history to be sexually, to be gay and young. And,
well, no, because I came to that late, and by the time I started dipping my big toe into the gay community, if you will, the rules had been posted on the scoreboard. Like
you knew the deal.
I knew the deal. And
did you date girls in college?
Yeah.
Post college.
Yep.
And
yep.
When did you stop doing that? When
did mid to late 20s.
Did you know it was bullshit, or were you confused, or was it
confused?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're the only person that's ever asked me all that. So good for you. But I had a friend in college that was gay,
mm-hmm.
and he was across the hall. We had an instant liking for each other.
Right.
And we used to hang out all the time.
Yeah.
This is UMass. And I wasn't ready for that yet. We never talked about it. We used to hang out all the time.
But were you confused? Were you confused?
It was in high school
and junior high?
Yeah, when not did you really, start? But no. I mean, it was rattling around.
I mean, there was no Phoebe Cates for you in high school. No. There was no male. Like, there was no guy you looked at some movie star and you were like, no?
No.
So, okay. So, UMass. Go ahead.
And so Rick was smarter than me, more mature than me. And by the next year, he had moved to a different part of campus. And I could see he was hanging out with gay guys. And
yeah.
So, but my point being is that that lovely, sweet guy died of AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And he paid a terrible price for the lack of knowledge he would have had back in the 70s.
Right.
Well, I wasn't ready to do that then.
Yeah.
And so by the time I was ready, we knew what was going on.
Right.
You know, as Randy Schultz has written so eloquently, Band Played On. And so I was, my immaturity and uncertainty and whatever you want to call it,
made
me the unwitting beneficiary. Which is why I'm 60 years old and sitting here talking to you right now.
How often do you talk to, how often will you talk to somebody who calls you up and says, somebody gives you the number, you know, let's say I had a friend, right, who was confused or whatever, and I knew this person, and I'd say, well, call Buck, you know, I wouldn't do that necessarily, but does that happen? I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that does
happen. I mean, it's sort of forward for me to do
that. It's more email than anything else.
Yeah, but it happens a lot.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't say it happened a lot
at first
in 11, 12, and 13.
Yeah.
Not so much now, but still get
right.
There have been a few occasions where somebody wanted to talk to me in some pretense.
Right.
And then they bowled me over with the gay thing. I didn't see that coming. Some of the emails I got when I first came out were heartbreaking because there was one guy in particular. You know, he's married for 15 years, and my wife and I were like roommates. We never talk.
Yeah.
We never, you know, and I can't come out because I've got kids, and so I call that living your life by other people's rules, which also takes us back to why outing is such a terrible thing.
But you can say now that was Jerry Callahan.
That was
that's okay. We've kept the secret long enough.
I got to tell you, I have not met your bride. I have met Jerry's wife on a number of occasions.
She's awesome.
And she's like the greatest of all time.
Fantastic.
And I saw her in spring training. I saw her at Jerry's father's wake. That's the last two times I've seen her in recent years.
She's a saint.
But she is the best. And
well, Jerry loves you, though. You know that.
I like Jerry.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you brought that up because when I did come out, one of the questions I kept getting asked was, well, Jerry Callahan, he's a racist and he's a homophobe.
No, bullshit.
Jerry is one of the most honest people I've ever met in my life.
Right.
And I've said that behind his back. I've said it to him. I've said it on the air. I've said it off the air. I've known Jerry for 30 years. I've known Jerry when he was with the Lowell Sun.
Right.
And in a world where so much is said behind people's backs, and I always have this joke, who's the worst sports writer in Boston? The worst sports writer in Boston is the one who isn't currently in the room at the time.
That is true. That is
true. Follow me?
Yes, that is definitely true.
And I've been saying that for years. You can be sitting in the room and then you leave to go downstairs and get a Coke or something, and all of a sudden the wallpaper is being peeled off with, you know, the commentary. Jerry's Jerry. I do think he's evolved.
He has.
And that's okay. And I'm a big history buff, and And, you know, go back and read, you know, Harry Truman back in the early part of his life. He was a borderline Klansman. It was Harry Truman who desegregated the military.
Right.
Go back and read the Lincoln-Douglas debates.
Yep.
Lincoln made statements that by today's standards are clearly racist. Yet he's the guy that pushed through the 13th Amendment that abolished slavery.
Well, I mean, you read things about LBJ and he would be dropping the N-word left and right. But he got the Civil Rights Act passed.
Yeah, 1964 Civil Rights Act. And I just watched that the other night way.
It was all right. A little too on the nose for me.
On the nose?
Yeah, one is like every scene is a big scene, you know? he just sits around the office.
I did tell you that, I did say before I watched it, that you know he's going to be taking a dump.
Because that's
what we've heard.
Right.
That he was going to pick up the dog by the ears.
Right.
There are certain LBJ hit points that they covered because they felt they had to.
They had to, yeah.
And I didn't know that he did it in front of Humphrey, by the way, but that's cool.
So you were on the Big Show forever. You filled in here a lot.
Right.
Lately, I haven't heard a lot of Steve Buckley on WEEI.
No.
What's going on?
The phone stopped ringing.
Why?
I have no idea.
I know you have theories. We've talked about it.
My theories are that they decided they wanted to put other people on the air. But again, that goes right back to Glenn firing me back in 1995.
Yeah.
And me ending up with 15 years on The Big Show as one of the prominent co-hosts. So I'm not going to lob hand grenades at WEEI because things are cyclical. Things will turn around.
I should really have your attitude.
No, it's just common sense.
Well, I know that, but
If you want to get into the nitty gritty, Phil and I are good friends.
Phil Zachary's the VP here.
And the reason Phil and I are good friends, it's a very strange story.
Because you're trying to get on the air more.
No. Well, I would love to be back in the air. I'm not going to hide from that.
Up to management. That's a good strategy.
It's a true story. What happened was I do diversity speaking.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. For fun and profit. Ernst & Young invited me to speak to its employee base one night a couple years ago. I took the tea in. I spoke at the event. I had dinner with one of your people.
Do you have a basic stumps? Do you have a basic set speech for this?
It's Harry Truman whistle stop campaign, you know.
Right.
And I'm walking by Davio's. Now, you know, Glenn Big Shot has his own table by the window because he's friends with Steve DeFilippo. As I'm walking by, I say to myself, geez, that's the table where I came out to Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
And I look there, and who's sitting there but Glenn?
Right.
And I'm like, what a coincidence. And Glenn waves me in, and it's Phil Zachary, who I never met.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil and I hit it off, and Phil lives near me, and we have dinner once in a while. And Phil and I have a great relationship.
You never talk about why am I not on the shows more, why am I not on the weekends?
Because he's not the program director. That's his answer. Kevin Graham's the program director. Kevin could put me on the air tomorrow. Kevin has chosen to put other people on the air. That's Kevin's business.
Does it frustrate you?
Of course it frustrates me.
Do you hear
me
say, this guy, I'm better than this guy? I do it all the time.
Yes.
Like who? I say names.
That's your choice. And the relationships I have with people are based on...
You can just say Tangway. You can just say it.
I thought that when I was doing the morning show with you guys, I was awesome because I provided a balance to what you guys were saying.
With me and Tangway? Or who?
You,
or Jerry, or
Dino,
whoever.
Jerry, any combination thereof.
Right.
Gary has made a choice to be bombastic.
Yes.
It's manufactured. Correct? Did you ever hear his Patriots pregame shows?
Well, here's the thing, though. Yes. Yes.
Well?
But was that manufactured?
Oh,
and is this reality?
So you say he's really evil and he was
evil?
Hiding
it
before.
I don't think he comes across like evil on the air. I think he comes across like, you've been with him 5 million times in the green room. That doesn't sound right. But you know what I mean? You've talked to him.
We don't talk about that.
You know us.
There are limits to what we're going to be candid about here, okay, pal?
Boy. He's not your type, is he?
He's not my type.
No, good God. Good God Almighty. But I'm, you know, off the air, he's sort of like he is on the air now. I always thought that was closer than the Kraft sucking up stooge on 98.5. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't
know. Well,
but you're right. Whatever this is, he's embraced it. And he's run with it. Is there a shelf life to it? Maybe. Maybe there's something to you.
There's a shelf life to you too, pal. So
no, absolutely there's a shelf life to me. You think there is?
You could tone it down. So I've had to turn you off a few times.
Really? Like when?
And you know that I like you, right?
I think we get along pretty well.
And I've done radio with you. And I touched on it before. You went off on DuPont once. DuPont is not a bad writer. He's a very good writer.
He's a shitty writer.
Now,
and when I got in trouble a couple of years ago,
now wait a minute.
Tried
hold on.
To get me, well, can you bring him up? He tried to get me fired publicly on Twitter. He tried to get me in more trouble.
Right.
Tried to stir shit up. So fuck him. What am I supposed to do? Like the guy? How would you feel about it?
No. What you are doing, and this is what I've
been. You're talking about Cracker Jacks.
And now, see, that I don't have a problem with. I want to see. See, the thing is. You can only, when you do a radio show,
go ahead.
I learned this from Glenn.
Yeah.
When UMass went to the national championship game in 1AA football back in 03, or whatever
it was.
I won, because Don Brown, who was then the coach, he was a coordinator at BC, now he's at Michigan.
You wrote about him?
What's that?
You wrote about him?
Well, no, but I did. But my point was, I went out to see Don Brown to write a column.
Yeah.
Don Brown was the biggest Big Show fan on the planet.
Yeah.
He used to sit in his car after practice and listen to the Wine
Alarm. He wanted to come on.
And he wanted to come on.
Nobody wants to hear him.
And I said, put him on for 10, 15 minutes. And what Glenn taught me was it's not a newspaper. You can run 50 different newspaper stories, and you can turn the pages find the story, but you can only talk about one thing at one time.
The guy in the car is not wanting to hear Don Brown.
And if you put Don Brown on for even 10 minutes,
death.
It's an invitation to turn to the other station.
Correct. What is your point?
My point is, I had no problem with the Cracker Jack story because it's one story. I would not listen to you guys talk about Cracker Jacks for half an hour.
Right.
But if I'm turning the pages, I want to see diversity. I want to see different things. What he's doing with that column, and it's well written, by the way.
The Cracker Jack column?
Yes, it's well written.
You read the whole Cracker Jack column?
I did read the whole
thing.
That's
not true. Go ahead.
Well, okay. And
I don't believe you.
Okay, fine. And
agreed. This
I want to see some. I want to see some different things in the paper. Now, here's where I'm going to defend you.
Thank you.
Kevin DuPont works for the Globe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kevin DuPont's one of their best-known writers of all time was Will McDonough.
Right.
Will McDonough has passed away, and I'm not going to beat up Will because he's not here to defend himself, but Bob Ryan was always fond of saying the reason Willie will never retire is he has his column to reward his friends and punish his enemies, which he did with aplomb for many years.
Sure. And I read it all the time.
He can take that column, and who am I going to punish and reward this week?
I like that, though.
I'm simply saying that this is precisely what you do.
What do you mean?
You are using your pulpit at WEI to reward your friends and punish your enemies.
Oh, I guess that's true.
Well, it's entirely true.
I think there's some accuracy to that.
It's 100% accurate.
I recognize the thought.
So you reward Rob.
But isn't that part of the job? How do I reward Rob?
You're taking it as a criticism.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm saying I think you're absolutely right. But where am I rewarding Rob? What have I done for Rob?
You smooth the way for Rob all the time.
Give me one example. He's my son's godfather.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
So what?
Thanks for making the point so easily.
I'm trying to help you out.
I asked you if you had a problem with him with Joe Kelly and doing the suit.
I told you.
But you hemmed and hawed. I kind of don't like it.
Your point is, if it was Kevin Paul DuPont with a player, I'd go nuts.
That's my point.
Totally accurate criticism.
And so
you're right.
So you were using your pulpit.
Yeah.
To punish Kevin DuPont for a slight.
It's Kevin Paul DuPont.
When
he wrote for the Herald, he was Kevin DuPont.
He was, actually.
Right. It's different when you go to the Globe.
Lee Monfort used to joke about that all the time. And,
it's a douchey move.
Lee has the squeaky voice.
Yeah.
I liked him better when he was just Kevin DuPont.
It was
the New York Times. He went to the Times before the Globe.
Right,
that's where the Kevin Paul thing. Kevin's a great guy.
Wonderful.
He's a wonderful writer.
Great guy.
And he's one of my favorite people on the planet. And mm-hmm. If you want to beat him up, you go ahead.
Well, you would if you were me.
If you want to beat him up, go ahead. Your house, your rules.
Anyway. But you're making it sound like that I'm doing this because I'm some radio madman or something. You know me.
But you are a radio madman.
You know me
but
well
I go back to my original statement. You are using your column as Will did his to reward
Who
your friends.
Who doesn't do that on the radio?
That is my point, and this is why I'm not in a snit. If you want to go after Kevin DuPont, have at it, pal.
Right, but he's a great guy.
But I don't agree with it.
You don't agree that you tried?
I could sit here with a legal pad from 6 a.m. to midnight and keep a running score, agree, disagree with everything you said, and I'd go through 30 legal pads.
I do that. I've told you the story when I got suspended a couple of years ago, which I deserved. I went up to the upstairs in Maine and made a list of, like Nixon, made a list of my enemies and swore that one by one I was going to get them eventually.
And how's that working out?
Slowly. Very slowly.
I learned dealing with you in the past that there's no such thing as off the record. There's no such thing as a corner discussion. everything.
Buck, you told me you were gay 20 years ago. I never told anybody.
I was talking about DJ because I didn't know what a loose cannon you were yet, but you went nuts on DJ because of some perceived slight.
Same thing.
And I like DJ.
Not perceived.
And I thought it was real. I didn't think it was you just being a lunatic, but I thought it was real. And I thought that, I'll have you.
Oh, this was the summit.
Yeah, I thought I'd have you over.
The steak summit.
I was going to cook steaks.
Right.
And I called you up and I called DJ up.
Yeah.
And then you did a 45-minute rant on me the next day.
No, that's not true.
Because I dared to call you and invite you over.
You didn't say it was off the record.
I just assumed it was. Maybe,
really?
Maybe I should have posted that beforehand.
Well, we did our first show together, 7 years ago?
Maybe.
Yeah. We filled in for Mikey.
Yes.
And I sat in the...
It was the best show in that time slot in years.
No question. I sat in the rider seat. And we didn't know each other at all. Maybe we had met at some event or something. And it was great. I don't think we've ever had a problem.
No. I've had no
personal... You don't want any grievances now? No?
No. The one issue I have with you, and it's so tiny, is that in spring training, you came up to me in the press box. And you made some comment about the Globe seized the day on the photo of Pablo Sandoval with his belly hanging out. Harold ran the same photo.
I didn't see it. I don't think.
And you didn't see it. And you said, "No, Globe took the day." And I said, "No, because as much as you rail against the Globe,
I hate the Globe.
Except that you went to their website or a paper or hard copy that day.
You know how it is. Somebody put it in my hands,
right? And you claim that the Herald didn't have the photo, which it did.
That's the best you got.
That's my point.
All right, well,
my point being, wait a minute, hold on.
Go ahead. You're right.
As a precursor of what I was about to say, I said I have no problems with you. Well, this is picking you, searching for something. That's what I'm saying. I don't have problems with you.
Right. No. Yeah. We get along.
You're enormously entertaining on the radio, and you've really awakened that show.
Yeah.
go ahead. In you certainly are a different presence than Meter was.
Mm-hmm.
And
you wrote the story with John. You wrote how did you feel about doing that?
That was a weird day because...
Well, you had something else going on.
No, that was a crazy day. I was in my car. I was driving up to Bill Ricca.
I talked to you that day, yeah.
To interview the dentist who is replacing Dick Hoyt.
Who I'm running with next year, Brian Lyons.
Oh, you know Brian.
I know Brian. I'm running on the team next year.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
So I'm going to... So he's like, I can fit you in between like 9:30 and 10 because he's a dentist.
Right.
And I'm driving up to interview him. And then I hear that the jury from Aaron Hernandez is coming in.
That's the day. Right.
And I called up Sean Leahy, who's the sports editor at the Herald, and the deal was I would stop everything and write a column on Aaron Hernandez when the jury came in. And I said, listen, this guy is a dentist, and he's got patients, and I can't.
Yeah.
And he said, no, go do that, and then as soon as you get done, call me back. So I go in there, interview Brian, who's, is a lovely guy.
Yeah, very nice.
And while I'm talking to him, I get a tweet on my phone saying that Shirelli's being fired. And so I come out of that and I call up Sean and he said, look, we've got 10 people writing on here. Would you mind writing a Shirelli column? I said, no, there's a press conference. I'm going to drive into Boston, grab lunch, and then go to the Shirelli press conference. While I'm driving into that, Dino calls and he says, I got something important I want to talk to you about. So I pull the car over.
How often do you talk to him?
Once in a while.
Really?
Yeah.
More than I do.
And, that's your thing.
Yeah.
And
no, I understand.
So he wants to do this. So now I call up Sean and I say, Dino's got a pretty important story. He's going to take a sabbatical from EEI to deal with substance abuse issues. And so I think it's a pretty significant story. And he wants to give me this story. And he says, oh, great. I says, can you still do Shirelli? Oh, boy. So, I'm a fat cat columnist. You write one column a day and then you go running. And so I rush into the Shirelli press conference, and I'm they're talking smack at this thing. Charlie Jacobs and Kim, they're all up there. So I said to Charlie, so why is Shirelli being fired?
Oh, that was that day, right.
And he says, well, at the end of any season, you're always looking to improve and blah, 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 blah. And I gotta go write two columns now. I haven't got time. But I said, you could have said that. You could have won the Stanley Cup and said that.
Right.
Why are you firing him? And then, and then I said, why are you firing Peter Shirelli?
Right.
And that's when he memorably turned to, Hal, can you help me out? Like in a few good men.
Because were you on Comcast that night?
I was later on.
Because we were on with us. You were on that.
Yeah.
Right.
And
I used to do Comcast.
And so then I had to rush home and write the Dino column and the Shirelli column.
So a story like that with Dino, is it hard to make an opinion story almost has to be.
I wrote it newsy.
From his perspective.
I wrote it from
right?
his perspective. But I did say, he said he only had two drinks.
That's what I mean. That's.
But I said, but I wrote, if you read it, I wrote, he said he only
he
had
said.
Two
that's
drinks.
What I mean. So you have
yeah,
to take
so
it.
So there's
from
a lot
that.
Of attribution going on there. And like I said, I think that people who know that I don't drink think I had this big crisis in my life and that I saw God.
Right.
And
but not really.
And no, I just stopped drinking.
Yeah.
I can't explain how it happened.
Right.
I had 1 year in my life where I started to drink a lot. And I'm really vain about being heavy.
Yeah.
And it goes back to that first time in the press box. Everybody seemed like they were. And as I got into my 30s, I was starting to get a gut. So that's why I stopped drinking. It wasn't because I was down in the gutter and you know, it was
just
like
vanity.
Ronald Reagan and that Grover Cleveland Alexander story where, you know, you're just falling
there,
down.
There you go, Buck.
And that's for you.
Yeah.
And so I think there are people who think I overcame my demons. No,
right.
I overcame my beer gut is what I did.
Well, I just stopped. I wasn't an everyday drinker, but I could never have one drink. Ever. I would have
I
to.
I couldn't either.
10
no,
or 15.
It was,
and it would
it
get
was,
to a blackout
was,
or to a...
Yeah, zero beers or 10
peeing
beers.
Peeing and just in weird places.
What was your alcohol choice?
I would drink... I wouldn't drink a lot of beer. I was never a big beer drinker.
That's all I ever drank.
I would drink a drink that was actually called a Screaming Nazi, which is a mix of Rumpelmintz and Jägermeister. 100 proof.
I was going to call it the Donald Trump special,
yes,
but I know you guys
yes.
you guys are down on the Nazi comparisons. I
That's
listen
probably
to your
true. But I would have two or three of them. I'd be gone, and I'd have seven or eight more, and then I'd be hungover for 2 days, and eventually I just said, screw it. You know, life's too
yeah.
short. I can't do it. And there's alcoholism all over my family, and I don't think I was as bad off as some
we
of them
We had that
were.
On my mother's side.
Yeah, so I just said, let's cut
Though
this cord.
Though not my mother, I should point
right.
out.
Cut this cord right now and be done with it. Are you going to... So you're 60 now.
Yes.
You're writing at the Herald.
Yes.
Do you have an end date?
No.
You don't? Would
no.
you write to your 85? Would you be one of those guys?
Yeah, I don't think I'll be able to, but...
you know what I mean. Would you do it?
70 is a good time for me. I'd like to keep doing it because...
Could you retire today?
No. Maybe in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
You're talking about financially?
Yeah. Could you just
yeah,
walk away?
Yeah, if I had to, I could.
Yeah.
I've been pretty good with money. I'm not a I got really lucky when I bought my house. I
yeah.
bought it when you could buy them by the dozen.
Right.
And everyone knows I live in Davis Square, so I don't think that's a big secret. And I was so lucky. Davis Square was a honky-tonk back then.
Right.
It was like literally within 6 months after I moved
exploded.
In.
Exploded.
It went nuts.
Yeah.
Houses go for a buck and a half now in my
right.
neighborhood. And I could never afford to live there now. So, no, if I had to, I could. 3 or 4 years.
But you like it though. You like it.
No, I love it.
You like being in the mix.
Yes.
Like, I don't, you're like sort of like Ryan in that
I love
regard.
It. I love it. I mean, witness what has happened in this market since the Tuck game, which was the first playoff game,
right.
as we talked about. There's 9 championships. There's the Celtics losing in the finals. The Bruins losing in the finals. The Patriots losing in the Super Bowl. And there's been so much. And it's not just the championships. It's the stories. The stories that have come out of all this and the relationships that I've built with certain athletes over the years. I have a great relationship with Schilling. The transgender thing was a catastrophe for him, and I called him out on it.
Right.
David Ortiz and I went 2 years without talking.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an argument in the dugout in Toronto once that was so heated that Francona later said he thought we were playing around.
Right.
It was like the Earl Weaver, Ron yeah, Luciano
yeah, yeah.
with the cap on back
right.
and stuff. And where he won me over was the speech he made that day at Fenway Park. Because I want you to know that not to make this about me, but the marathon bombing is in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys were so good with Bauman and all that.
Yeah.
That touched me deeply.
Sure.
Those two guys went to my high school. They lived on the street my father lived
oh,
on.
Oh, sure.
Norfolk
right,
street
right,
in
right,
Cambridge.
Right.
And I vowed that night I was going to run the marathon again. I was done with the marathon. I had done my one marathon. I ran the next year for ALS for Pete Frates.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of Pete. I just needed a vehicle. I
sure.
ran because of those assholes.
Yeah.
And I get emotional just like, because I love the marathon more than I could possibly explain. I used to get autographs of marathoners when I was a kid.
Yeah.
That's how much I love the marathon.
Well, now it's just turned into something else now.
And
it's become
a statement that we
right.
move on
Correct.
And that we celebrate life.
We did the shows, like you said, we did the shows a couple weeks after, and we just were operating under the assumption that they weren't going to be able to do it anymore.
Yeah.
or they were going to close it to the public. And instead, it was this great fuck you to all these people. We're going to do it our way, which is now it's become, correct, a statement.
And the beauty of it is that it's like 30 different sporting events in one. You can focus on the elite runners. And,
yeah, I don't even care about them, right. It's guys like us.
Exactly. Yeah. And the true beauty of the marathon is seeing – like the day that you finished a couple of years ago, I happened to run into you.
The first person, I was going to tell the story. I ran the marathon. The first person you see after you get your medal and you walk, it's kind of a long walk when you're done and you're sore. You know, you're happy.
Oh yeah, you're ready to collapse.
All emotional and you're happy and you're sad and you just want to sit down. And the first person I see is you, and you're like, hey. And boom, you take a picture, and then that was it.
Well, I also hugged you. And the next day, you were retelling that story. You said, Buck saw me, hug me. And you kind of said it, well, I didn't goose you or anything. I just gave you
the right hand was a little lower than it should have been. I was in prime running shape at that point. You're only human, Buck.
And what can I say? And I love the marathon.
It's the greatest.
And Dave McGilvery is a good buddy of mine.
Yeah.
We have lunch two or three times a year.
So you're going to run another one then?
I can't. My hip is
fixed. You're going to run another one.
Yeah, I wanted to run 60 because I turned 60 2 years
before
that.
You wanted to do it right.
And Dave is getting on me to do another one. And his ex-wife, Sue Hurley, you know, charityteams.org, is a really good buddy of mine. And there are so many people that have run the marathon that John Young.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And I once did a practice run in a big group that he was in.
Yeah.
And he's Canadian.
Right.
And he always says he's Canadian with an A, not with an E.
Right.
Because I always joke about how the Canadians are all floppers.
Yeah.
So he was running about 100 feet in front of me, and I went up and I hip checked him into a snowbank
just
to see if he'd fall down.
Right.
And it sounds like the meanest thing you can do is hip check a little person into a snowbank. But if you understand our relationship,
he can take shit and give it out too.
And he can take shit and give it out. And he is becoming one of our, like, Johnny Kelly iconic marathon,
definitely. It's a moment when you see him, yeah.
And for those of you don't know, he's a dwarf. And
his backstory is unbelievable.
And the doctor said, no, little people don't run. You can't run or ruin your spine.
Right.
And there he is. And he is such an important person in the running community.
No question. I saw that the year I saw you. You know, he starts out before I do.
Yeah.
And I was starting to hit the wall a little bit. And I saw him at about almost right before that little bridge you go over at Kenmore, you know.
Which is Mount Everest to me, by the way.
At that point, it totally feels like it. And I got so emotional seeing him. And we know each other because he listens to the show. We'll direct message. And I gave him a slap on the back. I didn't hip check him because I'm not an asshole. But I ran by him. And you know how it is. It actually gives you – I was so emotional. I felt such a lift from it. It was a great moment, yeah. But that's – so you know, so that, well, you'll do one more. You'll get the hip replaced.
Yeah, I'm going to try. And the first doctor I saw said, oh, you can never run a marathon again. But they told John Young not to run, so what do they know?
Fuck that. All right, Buck, I'm going to let you go. You're going to hear you again on EEI soon? A couple more dinners with Zachary. You'll be back on the air?
What did Pete say, the olive branch? See, I have no olive branch to extend because I have no issues.
Maybe you need some issues. That's how you get back on the air.
Really?
Yeah, say something.
So Pete's going back on the air then? Pete has issues.
But that's up to management. I don't know. You get along with everybody at the station?
I have to go. Yeah, I'd say so.
Dale, Holly,
Thornton. I'm not buddies with Dale. I mean, Dale and I have been friends. You know, we go back 30.
We did a lot of radio with him.
Yeah, with a lot of radio. But no, we went back to Maine.
No, I know, right.
He was the play-by-play guy. Dale would, and we're going to go overtime, but Dale travel with the team. I used to cover the game. Sometimes I wouldn't travel.
Yeah.
Dale's job was to call in. I would listen to the game on the radio, and then when the game was over, Dale would get quotes from Tom McVie.
Bring back to you.
Call them in from Sherbrooke or Freddie or whatever.
Right.
And I always claimed that Dale just made up the quotes, and he gets you know, because they're trying to get on the bus and go on to Magog or someplace.
It's changed a lot, though. What do you think of sports talk radio now versus, I don't know, 15 years ago? Or has it changed a lot?
Well, I still say there are two really good shows in Boston. One of them is yours, and one is Felger and Maz.
Yeah.
And I think Felger and Maz are ripe for the picking if you guys went aggressive after them. And Glenn's show is gaining traction.
Mm-hmm. I think
it's certainly better than it was before Glenn was there. Glenn needs to be on EEI.
Yeah.
Because we need Glenn. And Glenn, listen, Glenn doesn't call me anymore. Glenn doesn't call you anymore. You know what I'm talking
That's
about?
That's true. You're right.
Yeah, the gossiping and the long phone calls are gone because he has his outlet now.
And then, do you ever notice that you could talk to Glenn on the phone and tell him something?
And then he would tell it back to you?
And he would tell it back to you 3 days later?
You say, I'm here. They're not happy with Ben's. I'm like, yeah, Glenn, I told you that 3 days ago.
And so Glenn's important to this market, and Glenn needed to have a stage, and I'm glad he has it.
Yeah, and you are okay.
I would love to be back with Glenn.
Back there with Glenn?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's the happiest 15 years. Some of the most fun I've had in 38 years in this business was doing the big show.
Well, it's so much easier than writing, right?
And for me to not say that would be disingenuous.
What was your least favorite radio experience?
Oh, ask Glenn. Glenn will tell you exactly what it was. It was on Saturday morning. They paired me up with Howard David. Who was the
play-by-play guy?
They just hired Howard to do the Celtics.
Yeah.
And Howard, as part of his deal, had to do a Saturday morning show. And Howard's a great guy, but Howard and me had no chemistry at all. Howard was a big Atlanta Braves fan.
Right.
He went on the very first show and did 40 minutes on Fred McGriff.
That's not good.
And I'm sitting there saying, I don't want to talk about Fred McGriff. I'd rather talk about Tony C.
Right.
You know, something that's up my alley.
Right.
And no, but that was, it had nothing to do, Howard and I, this is a absolute fact. Howard and I had never met until we went on the air at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Can you imagine going on with a new partner? Didn't they whisk you guys off to Florida and all
that
stuff?
No, that was Salk and Hawley.
Salk and Hawley.
Worked out well. I'd worked with John.
Salk was a bad fit for this
market. I'd never worked with Jerry, even as a filling guy, before I was on the show.
You were just sort of like the little chimp on a stool there.
Sort of graduated.
And then you sort of took over the show.
But don't you think it's essential? Like, Glenn's one of those guys. You're one of those guys. Jerry is, Mutt for me is, we can go, like, you and I, it can get heated, we can get mad, but when the red light goes off, it doesn't matter.
But it wasn't always that way. When I first was doing the big show with Glenn,
You weren't always that way.
No, I learned after, but the other thing is, and I'm sure you know this, but what happens is someone comes up to you and says, hey, they ripped you on the big show.
Right.
And then I say, hey, I heard you ripped me on the big show. Well, they made jokes about hair dye and the usual, you know, Tony C or something, usual crap.
I'll get tweets about that. Oh, they're shitting all over you on, and then I hear it's nothing.
Once I was doing it on a regular basis, and it was the best thing ever for my career, doing the big show.
Definitely.
More people reading the column, more people inviting me to speak, more people coming up to me at Fenway.
Probably leads to TV, right?
Totally did.
Yeah.
And the big show was phenomenal.
I think that format could work today. You could plug in and it would work today.
Yeah.
I think, you know, people are sick of hearing the same three voices every day on every show. I think that was the genius of it. You know,
I am right that Glenn doesn't call you anymore, right?
We talk every once in a while. But when he wasn't working,
he doesn't call you at 11 in the morning and stuff like he used to.
Yeah, and he won't say, "Geez, what's going on with Dino? He's losing it." I'm not saying I could fit in there better, but and you would say, "Glenn, yeah, no, I understand, yep." And his phone was always shitty, and it'd cut out like three times, and it'd be the same seven rumors.
Yep.
But this is exactly what he's doing right now. He was born to do it.
Totally.
And I think he's the best in the city ever at it.
Totally. Couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, other than me, obviously. All right, Buck, we'll do this again. So we didn't get to, it's like 20 things we didn't get to.
Well, you got my number.
Yes.
Maybe when we're doing a show sometime, we'll have some steaks. Yes.
We'll bring DJ over.
Bring DJ over.
We'll have the whole conversation. Can we do like one each week? We'll bring DuPont over the next week.
That's what I do. I bring people
Shaughnessy.
Together. No, but I'd be happy to do a show with you and talk about these things sometime.
Good. We will do that over the summer at least, right?
Oh, yeah. Am I like the Memorial Day, Labor Day guy again?
He's the July 4th guy. It's going to be you and Dino on July 4th. All right. Thanks, Buck.
See you later.
Thanks for listening to Enough About Me with Kirk Minahan. If you want more great podcasts, it's pretty easy. You can go to the WEEI mobile app. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to iTunes. You can look up Enough About Me with Kirk Minahan. You can find the ones with Sean McDonough, Bob Ryan, Dan Shaughnessy, David Portnoy. There'll be more. And what you can do when you like them, you write a review. That'll help us out a lot. You give us a rating. We can help you. You can help us. Get that done. Do it right now.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
When MLB talent takes the field, reactions get loud.
Aaron Judge with a blast.
Oh, my God!
Whole scheme.
Struck him out with 102.
Laser beam. Walk off, baby! This is the best.
Witness baseball greatness for yourself at the ballpark. Yeah! Baseball is something else.
Yes!
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.